You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Critics Table. Every episode, we are joined by three luminary theater critics as they review the latest shows on and off Broadway. You may agree with one, all of them, or none at all, but we ask that you listen first and ask questions later. Let's join the table, shall we?
Hi, I'm Juan Michael Porta II, and this is The Critics Table, a new podcast where we discuss the hottest shows in New York. First, let's hear about our panel today. I'm Juan Michael, as I mentioned.
Hi, I'm Christian Lewis.
Hi, this is Ryan Xia.
And we are discussing The Skin of Our Teeth. Let's get into it. Recipient of the 1943 Pulitzer Prize for Drama, Thornton Wilder's visionary masterpiece, The Skin of Our Teeth, illuminates the endurance of the human spirit as it follows the Antrobus family of Excelsior, New Jersey, as they persevere through an ice age, a biblical flood, and war. Can we get some of our initial thoughts about this incredible production?
I absolutely loved this production so much. It is a long one. It runs, I think, a little over 3 hours. We have two intermissions. It's not like a multi-parter, but it definitely feels like a very long play. It's a Thornton Wilder absurdist drama. It's nothing like the Our Town you probably saw in high school. So it's a little adjustment for like a theater goer in 2022. But it is a perfect production of a difficult play that spoke to so much about what we're going through right now, about the pandemic and surviving, and is the world going towards something better or something worse? And this production in particular cast the Antrobus family as Black actors and really got into making this play feel different and culturally specific in a great new way. So I'm totally on board with this production.
I absolutely agree. When I was in college, we did a production of The Skin of Our Teeth and I played a baby dinosaur. And I just remember not really getting it. And I've read this play over and over the years. This is the first time it hit me so hard. And I think if we're talking about first impression, I just cannot emphasize enough how fresh it felt like. It felt like a play that was written this year, as opposed to during World War II, which, if we think about it, it's apt and relevant, and it speaks so much about how cyclical we as a species kind of evolve over time.
I am in the minority of how I feel about it. I love the opening play. It's three distinct acts, I would say, where the family, the main characters stay the same throughout, but each situation doesn't necessarily relate to the other. And the second act is one that I've always found to be superfluous and unnecessary. There are some real gem moments within it, but I prefer the opening and closing act. And here I thought, seeing a Black family, but not seeing them portrayed in Black voice or Black face was really essential. And what I mean by that is sometimes when we do non-traditional casting, quote unquote, stereotypes are put onto the performers to make it a sort of explanation for why they would be here. And yet these wonderful actors were just allowed to be. And I thought, wow, this is the theater I want to see. And the direction was completely wild and not trying to make people it was challenging, I would say. Instead of giving people a Broadway razzmatazz, it was, let's go on this journey and it's going to be weird and you're going to get into it. And I feel like so many people definitely got sucked in for the ride. I know I did. I'm curious if we could talk about some of the standout moments, specifically production elements, actually, because this is such a production-heavy show or version of the show.
I don't think there's a way to even talk about Skin of Our Teeth without getting into the design of it. Adam Riggs' set design for this is pretty legendary. It's, I think, the first show since King and I at Lincoln Center that I can think of that really used the Vivian Beaumont for all of its vast, giant, super tall potential. We have a living room in Act 1 that tilts and falls apart, and Act 2 is like a boardwalk, New Jersey, with a giant slide and like rides and boosts, and it's amazing. And then Act 3 is this like beautiful landscape of like a post-war garden flower bed that like each time when like the curtain rise and I got to see the set, I like gasped and got emotional because it was just that beautiful. Also can't talk about this production without talking about the puppet design, which is just legendary. We have a woolly mammoth and I think a stegosaurus? Not a dinosaur, not a paleontologist here. But the puppet design here is amazing. Puppet design is really having a moment. It's the same puppet designer who did Milky White at the City Center Encore's production Into the Woods. So the puppet design here is just flawless. And I actually thought there was a lot of really subtle costume elements. Like I loved that the gowns that Mrs. Antrobus and Gladys wear in Act 3 were Victorian, tattered, stained versions of the exact same fabric of their 1950s cocktail dresses in Act 1. So I thought this was just a beautifully designed production. Like, across the board.
Yeah, I want to piggyback on the singing praises of the puppetry design because I wasn't even making the connection, but I've been a big fan of James Ortiz's The Woodsman. I don't know if anybody have caught it back in the days at New World Stages of this beautiful and unique take on the Tin Man story from The Wizard of Oz. And it was just one of the legendary puppetry moments. And I'm so glad he's having a ball like this season on Broadway and off. And I also wanted to kind of give a shout out to the sound design of this production because it's so easy to sort of overlook the sound element in a regular play that is not emphasizing on music or sound in particular, but the use of microphone in this piece that sort of use subtle voice augmentation to kind of enhance the storytelling was really hitting the spot.
Absolutely agree on all of these things. The elements were drawn together so brilliantly. I think that even if I wasn't able to hear the actors, the physical production would tell me a story. And that's actually what I always want from any show I see, something where nothing feels superfluous. And even when it's like gone, so what am I seeing? It still feels so integrated into the production. And to Christian's point about the set tilting, when those things happened, it made me think about the blizzard in New York City of 2004, where everything was shut down and I opened a window and all the snow started falling into my house and feeling that like, oh my God, like the world is literally coming undone. And the physical manifestation of that from Adam Rigg, and also, again, the puppetry, the way that the performers really articulated and gave personalities to each of these extinct animals was so impressive. I want this to be taught in schools. Can we jump into some of the performances that stood out for us?
A lot of great performances across the board, but I like will spend all of my minutes and all of my soapbox anytime I get to talk about this play talking about Gabby Beans as Sabina. I think it was like a generation-defining performance of a very famous role. Tallulah Bankhead is kind of what people think of with this role. Gabby Beans as Sabina, obviously so different, so her own. Incredible, extraordinary, so embodied, so real. The moments where she kind of like breaks character to talk directly to the audience, there's a lot of meta theater from her character built into this play. They are so good and so sincere that I saw people on Twitter being like, oh, I love that they updated this play and had that main actress talk to the audience. Like, that was so real. Like, people were so, if they didn't know, were so, like, convinced by her performance that they were like, wow, she's just, like, it. So her Sabina was great. And, well, Michael, to your point about Act Two, I really think that the actress playing Sabina has the most of a roller coaster in this play. Like, she really is kind of, like, playing two to three very different characters that are only loosely connected. And her bridging that gap was just so beautiful. And I think the main way she did it was the moments where she was like playing the actress playing Sabina instead, because that we always knew whenever she was mad at this play that she had to act in, it was the same person. She was so great. I hope she gets all the recognition for this, because she really, for me, she made this production what it was, along with the great design and Liliana Blaine Cruz's off the wall direction.
Yeah, this is kind of falling back to a previous question, but the second act almost felt to me like a Don Juan in Hell sort of thing, George Bernard Shaw reference, if that's okay. So Gabby Baines is playing an actor playing Sabina, playing a different character in like a pocket universe within the connected sort of tissues. And you just can't help it. You get very impressed, and she makes you follow the story. She's our psychopomp, basically.
Psychopomp, I love this reference. One thing I've heard from many people, and I observed this as well, is that it felt as if she was referencing Eartha Kitt throughout. And I think that that is like something, not that there's anything wrong with it, but I would like to reference that and see how that resonated with you all. Did you feel similarly?
I haven't heard that, but like just like light bulb fireworks just clicked when you said that. And I'm like, oh my God, that's what it was. I don't mind that at all. I loved it. I loved her performance so much. I liked that she was drawing on references that made this role feel so different and so original. And to your like one of your first points, also like felt like it really grounded this play and like letting this be a play about a group of Black actors that are playing a Black family. She like was not trying to be anything else. And I loved that.
I really liked the fortune teller.
Yeah, Priscilla Lopez. Yeah.
Priscilla Lopez made the fortune teller so grounded and relatable. And I feel like the fortune teller stereotype or archetype has always, you know, very ethereal and loopy, whatever. But like, she's the one who spoke a lot of the most grounded truth of this play. And then she made it work like nothing else.
That for me, you know, interestingly, if I was to consider like in comedy of Gabby Beans is like the top banana, the like the real comedian, for me, Rosalind Ruff was her straight man, essentially. And I think that she embodied that role with such grace and also added in twists of her own humor within the numerous sort of digs as she's navigating like what this woman wants and what this woman will accept, which the role for me has always been about what women are allowed to be and what women can see for themselves through history. And of course, we're now living in a time where women are once again being suppressed. And seeing this Black woman play this role with such poise and like understanding that I'm not allowed to act out, I'm not allowed to do certain things, but I'm still going to find a way to say my piece really moved me emotionally and made me think about many of the women in my life who have been put into places where they have to speak up, but have to remember that they can't lash out.
Yeah, I was especially moved by her performance in Act Two, where she's playing like the First Lady. And it was so interesting. And there's a moment where she has to give a speech and she like doesn't know, but she does. And it's about what is she actually allowed to say in this moment where she has like the biggest platform of her life. Also, in that scene, it was hilarious COVID parallel that there's like, they talk about a flu killing the world and she's like coughing in the corner. And it was like, ooh, just chef kiss perfect about a great little COVID moment that they didn't force at all.
That actually takes me to the final act where, you know, it's about war, essentially. And for me, it's the most beautiful act. It's the most elegiac. It's the, like, all of these things come together in such a crystalline way of like, ah, this is why we are here. I'm wondering for you all if there was a particular moment that stood out for you throughout this incredible 3-hour-long production that you will remember for years to come.
Oof, I really did get emotional just at the reveal of each set piece. But then there's a couple moments in Act Two, but the very ending of the play is an incredibly moving kind of discussion that actually, like, predicts a lot of how Hadestown ends, about like, oh, we already know this story, but we have to keep doing it. And Sabina and Mrs. Antrobus kind of have this discussion about, like, do we just have to keep doing this play forever? And it was really moving. It was really touching to, like, circle all the way back to Rand's point. I also read this play in college, and I was like, what is happening? I don't know what this is. I don't like this. I guess I'll go back to our town. I don't know. And seeing it here, I got it, and I got it so much, and so many of those, like, great moments, like, at the end stuck with me that, like, I'm now listing this in, like, one of my top 10 favorite plays, and I've read it twice since seeing this. Like, this play had so many of those little moments that, like, will stay with me and make me love this play.
The moment of dusting off those old books really stayed with me for some reason. It can even be a little bit out of context and stand alone, but that simple act of dusting off knowledge from the past to figure out who we are as a species together. And going back to, I don't know why I just love that fortune teller character so much, but possibly it's because her quote was my favorite quote of the entire play, where she says, "There's no time to lose. Start a new world, begin again." And that kind of became the structure of the play, and it kind of became how we live right here, right now. And that's how it's been going.
Yeah. Oh, last other, Brandon Jacob Jenkins made a few very small but very well done changes to this play to update it a little bit and to make it actually culturally specific and relevant to the Black family at the center of this. And one of those moments where I was just, like, wanted to, like, cheer in my seat was there was a couple very small changes in the quotes that they include at the end for that, like, kind of parade of the planets. And the bell hooks quote really just, like, got to me. And I was like, this play is doing something, and you can just seamlessly add that instead. And it's still doing the same great thing, but it feels really relevant in a new way. So that made me very happy.
And it's so well done. It's so subtle, too, because I was having trouble identifying where, like, which part is the updated part, and then I got it all wrong. I'm just impressed by both of the writers.
Yeah, the changes were small. There wasn't a lot of them. I actually would love to see if they just let him go off the rails and change a lot. But he made really small changes, and I love that, as you mentioned, a lot of them were hard to know. Was like, oh, was that him? Or did Thornton Wilder really write something that cool and hip in 2022? Which a lot of times, that's the answer.
My favorite sort of addition was the shout out to Booty Candy, which is like,
yes!
Oh,
yeah, shout
out! you know, for the moments that sort of got me in these are again in the third act was seeing Sabina and Mrs. Antrobus not have an antagonistic relationship between each other. They were on the other side of conflict. Like, we've lived through this great war, and having met people from other countries that were once, you know, at war with each other, and now they're here, and seeing them being able to drop that conflict as when I was a teenager living in Irvine, California, that was very beautiful to me and stood out to me. And in parallel, watching Mr. Antrobus and his relationship with Henry as they're fighting on opposite sides and not being able to work through their tension with each other, that very distinct thing that happens between fathers and sons really hit me a lot, because I am definitely at odds with my father, on Republican that he is, on many different things, and he is at odds with me as well. I think that they both hope that they could love each other regardless of how they feel about each other. And even if they're not able to see it, they are having this conversation, and that gives me something. What are our final quotes, our final thoughts, anything you want to leave with the audience, our listeners?
final thoughts. I'm happy that we have a theater like Lincoln Center that put on a giant, huge, like, opera of a production of a play that maybe people weren't familiar with or had kind of written off as that one confusing, weird, absurdist drama Thornton Wilder wrote. I'm happy that we got this huge play, beautiful designs, amazing acting, Liliana Blaise Cruz, amazing directing. I'm so glad that this production existed, and I will be thinking about it for a long time.
I'm so grateful to have witnessed a production in 2020 that's courageous enough to include so many absurd elements. And it's just a celebration of theatrical craft and collective storytelling. And at its core, this is such a hopeful play written in the darkest time of humanity, produced again in another darkest time of humanity. And it tells the story of perseverance. And, you know, there's so much hope in that. And then the hope we learn something from that as well.
I have been reading this play since I was a teenager and have seen many productions of it, which is funny. And I always ask myself afterwards, do we need to see this play? Now, I go in asking, do we need to see this play? And afterwards, I say, yes, we need to see this play. We need to remember. We need to actually confront the messy things and to accept that they aren't pat or tied up in a tidy little bow, and that ultimately the work is up to us. And that's what the show leaves us with. And I'm forever grateful for that message, that the work is up to us and we can accomplish it. And it will be a mess, but we will make it through somehow. Thank you for this incredible conversation. The Skin of Our Teeth was actually a limited run and has now concluded. We hope that you get to see a recording of it someday. But now let's hear about where we all write. I'm Juan Michael Porter II, and you can follow me at Juan Michael II on Twitter. I write for Theaterly, Did They Like It, New York Theater Guide, and other publications.
I am Christian Lewis. I am also a freelance theater critic. I write for Did They Like It, Theaterly, Theatermania, Variety, and you can find me on Twitter at CLewisReviews.
I'm Renxia. I am a freelance playwright and theater director. I write reviews for Did They Like It, as well as Theater's Easy. You can find me on social media at Rhino Riddler.
Thank you so much, everyone. This is The Critics Table.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of The Critics Table podcast. We would like to thank Jose Solis and the BIPOC Critics Lab team, who has generously partnered with us on this project. You can find out more about the BIPOC Critics Lab at BIPOCCriticsLab.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to this podcast so that you never miss a review, and learn more about our critics at bpn.fm/criticstable. The views or opinions expressed by the critics in this episode are solely their own and do not necessarily represent views or opinions of the Broadway Podcast Network. See you next time.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah,
not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.